WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We've got the whole new Chiron going here on our YouTube channel. And for all of our friends, it feels like a rejuvenation. I went with some Easter motif here. This is what the eggs used to look like over on Bank Street back in the day. Luke Jones joins us post-Easter, post-Red Sox sweep. And as you pointed out in the green rooming session, perhaps I should have Fenway Park behind me today instead of Oriole Park at Camden Yards, or maybe Yankee Stadium where the Orioles Brigade rolls into the Bronx here, haughty and undefeated, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny and cuts at Masson and all that. Who knew the Orioles owned Fenway Park? I mean, it's just go figure. But a great weekend of baseball, it really was. And it begins with the pitching. You allow 5 runs over 3 games at Fenway Park, you give yourself a great chance to win, even when you don't hit a home run the entire weekend. I mean, just think about those two things. If there's something about this Orioles team going into 2021, we thought, all right, you know, based on what we saw last year in a 60-game season, they hit the ball a little bit. I'm not saying it was the greatest offense in the league or anything like that, but they hit the ball a little bit. The big question was going to be, can they pitch? Can they pitch at all? And we didn't learn the answer to that. And Brandon Hyde said after Sunday's blowout win, all this means now we've got 159 more to go. So let's keep this in proper perspective. But for what it was a really nice weekend of baseball for the Orioles. You know, opening day postponement to Friday. John Means comes out and pitches as well as anyone did in baseball over the first series of the 2021 season. Matt Harvey, okay on Saturday. Not a lot of length, but was competitive. And then Bruce Zimmerman, who got staked to a huge lead with that 7-run third inning, gives you 6 competitive innings where you didn't have to go through a ton of bullpen pitchers. I mean, if you're going to be remotely competitive over 162 games, and when I say remotely competitive, meaning they're not losing 115 games, we know what this team is, and let's not get ahead of ourselves after one series sweep over a Red Sox team that wasn't very good last year, keep in mind. But if you're going to get through 162 games and you're going to battle teams and you're going to have some periods of time where you play well, you've got to get decent pitching. And they got good pitching over the weekend. I'm not expecting them to do that a lot. And I'm not expecting them to do that for multiple series at a time, multiple weeks at a time. But the more periods of time they can have like that, the more games they'll win this year. And the more interesting it will be. So for what it was, which is the first series of the season, and I'll remind everyone, they won 2 out of 3 in the first series last year. They won 2 out of 3 in the first series 2 years ago at Yankee Stadium after the blowout loss on opening day. So again, let's not get ahead of ourselves, but I think trying to give it some big picture type value, when you're talking about a team that's rebuilding and all they really know is losing, anytime you can have some prosperity, anytime you can have a little bit of success, I do think that's something that has value for young players, because you do get to a point, hopefully next year, year after that, you know, whenever it happens, that you want to start turning the corner and start seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. And the more positive experiences these young players can have, like going to Fenway Park and sweeping the first series of the season, I think that can help you down the line. So again, a nice weekend of baseball, and it was great to see it in the sense of, you know, they didn't hit any home runs. You know, it was kind of an unusual weekend in that way, but they come away with 3 wins and they're feeling really good about themselves. And while the Red Sox aren't feeling so good about themselves, I think I saw first time they've lost their first 3 at Fenway Park since 1948. So it gives you a sense of how rare that was.
Lou Jones joining us here, talking all things Oriole baseball. I would say this, shout out to Bill Cole and our friends at Cole Roofing. I had a great conversation with him about opening day and you know, what it means for us and our family and for the city and sort of for commerce. Also a shout out to Rofo for bringing me the chicken on Sunday night to make it through, and the coffee in my cup right now. So a Kona blend. Thanks there. Also, Wise Markets and our Wise Conversations. Let me be telling you more about that. Rob Santoni is bringing in some friends this week. Lots and lots of Wise connections. Lots of Wise guys from the Baltimore area, including WNST and me and Luke at this point. So we're going to be talking about all of our sponsors. I do want to talk about Boston a little bit in the way that I chatted with Shaughnessy and Ryan back Halloween week, let's say it was, because that was the week we played the Patriots, right? And, you know, the rain game and Cam Newton and all that stuff. And that was when the season wasn't going so well for the Ravens, right? And they both offered me this thought that the Red Sox aren't the number one in Boston. They're not the number two. They're a solid three. And in any given week when the Bruins are doing well, they could be the number four. I found that a very, very difficult admission from Bob Ryan, I think, was first. And then I brought it up with Shaughnessy. I said, you won't believe what Ryan said to me. I may chase those guys around a little bit this week just because they're squawky about it and the Red Sox are going to open here this weekend. But, you know, look, my heart doesn't cry for the Red Sox. You know, my wife pops up bald in Red Sox jerseys in the middle of my Easter. Literally, that's the way it went on Sunday. But, and I have no soft spot or hard spot, but whatever that is, beating the Red Sox like that, I mean, that feels great. It kind of reminds me of where Duke was at this point, or you know, downtrodden things. I mean, probably people feeling sorry for the Orioles back when they were beating our asses 20 years ago when the whole thing fell apart, especially in sort of an empty Fenway Park. It was just sort of cold and dreary, and they didn't look very good either. If these are two bad baseball teams, that's just a shame for baseball. That's all I'm going to say. You know, when things are that bad that we're watching both of them and saying, will either one of these teams get the 70 wins and will they do it by beating up on each other?
Yeah. And I mean, one thing I'll say to that, not so much with the Orioles, but in general, I mean, some teams have to be bad. I mean, you can't have 30 teams in baseball all be good at the same time. And it is kind of silly to hear, you know, some of the sentiments in Boston when they're only a few years removed from winning a World Series. Let's keep that in mind.
The Padres have been bad long enough. Even though I'm not a Machado guy, I've got a closet full of Padres stuff. Let the Padres finally win. They're wearing the mustard and the gold the way they and the brown the way they should. So there.
Oh, you look at what the powerhouse that the LA Dodgers are right now. I mean, you're hoping the Padres can challenge them a little bit. I mean, the way that division looks, the Dodgers look like they could run away by 16 games. So you're hoping the Padres can kind of be that. But it's interesting when you look at Boston. I mean, everything they've, you know, all the transition that they've made over the last few years. I mean, Mookie Betts is gone. I mean, the previous regime with Dave Dombrowski is gone. I mean, obviously, what's happened with Alex Cora being gone and coming back. I mean, it's a very strange period of time for the Red Sox where, you know, over the last 20, 25 years or so, you know, maybe a little bit less than that for the Red Sox because they weren't particularly good in the 90s, late 90s once Pedro arrived. But, you know, you've kind of been used to the Yankees and the Red Sox being good every single year. And I know Boston's had a few more peaks and valleys. The Yankees have been more consistent. Even their down years, they've still been pretty good. But this is a Boston team that finished in last place last year. And I know it was such a strange 60-game season that it was hard to really – take much away. I mean, so much was made of JD Martinez having just a terrible year last year. And you know, how real was that? How much of it's age? He's going to bounce back 162 games. And we'll find out that about so many different guys around the league, especially veteran players.
This is where I say Eddie Fainer had a breakout season in 20.
Right. I mean, it's just, you don't know what to make of it. It was real in the sense that it was 60 games, but how many times have we seen players perform or not perform over 60 games? And then the extra 102 balanced that out one way or the other. But you do look at this Red Sox lineup and it has some talent. I don't think they're devoid of talent. And they brought in guys like Kiki Hernandez and Marwin Gonzalez and, you know, some versatile type players. You know, I've even seen some people compare it that the Red Sox in that way are trying to emulate the Rays model of having positionless guys, so to speak, guys that you can line up at four or five different positions on any given night. You know,
my favorite was always Kurt Bavakwa, but that's just me.
Yeah. But
Tony,
you think
Phillips. Yeah. Yeah.
Think back to where the Orioles were even under the Buck Showalter era. You had Ryan Flaherty, who could play six different positions. You had Steve Pierce, who could play three, four, five different positions on any given season. So you see that they're pursuing that, but at the same time, while they have some young players who may develop into big time players, and you know, you see Dahlbeck at the bottom of their lineup and some other young guys, you've got a lot of unknown commodities there and some guys that you're just not quite sure about. I mean, you know, even look at, you know, he's not a young guy, but they're looking for someone like Garrett Richards to rebound. And he really struggled on Sunday, needless to say. So that's not to say I think the Red Sox are going to be god awful, but it has been interesting to kind of see the preseason projections. Just about everyone has said what? Red Sox fourth, Orioles fifth. And you've seen a lot of people say the Red Sox being 500-ish and the Orioles being somewhere in the neighborhood of 95 to 105 losses, depending on how pessimistic any specific prognosticator is.
Dude, you were at Camden Yards before the night that that they knocked the Red Sox out. Do you remember that? There was a rainstorm. Do you remember that?
Yeah. In September? You're talking about the Andino game?
Yeah, there you go.
You know what?
That's right. It's the curse of the Andino.
Full disclosure, because by that time I'm eyeball deep in Ravens coverage. I was not there that night.
I was there,
but I was around. You know, I was around that team plenty that year. But I wasn't.
Yeah. but for the fan base here at that point, and for the franchise to knock the Red Sox out, felt like that was the World Series when you had been the playoffs since 1997, and it was 2012, 15 years later, right? Like there's some booby prize or, you know, fourth place prize or whatever it would be. But I don't know that finishing ahead of that, whatever the hell that was and whatever that'll be this weekend, that you'd look at that and say, well, that's a measurement. No. Because if they win 63 and you win 67, I don't think anybody should feel good about themselves.
No, I would agree with that. I guess my point was looking at the Red Sox right now, while you could certainly see talent, although if you look at the Orioles, if you're looking in the right places, mainly the outfield right now, you can see talent. You certainly see a better lineup. I mean, go back and look at what their lineup was 2 years ago. The Orioles have made progress. It's just they were so rock bottom that takes time. And I mean, they still have a long way to go. Let's be clear about that. Even after the euphoria of a three-game sweep to open the season, when you have 159 to go.
Even the Mountcastle monster on Friday.
Right. But I think with the Red Sox, maybe if you're trying to draw any conclusion, I think it probably does say a little bit more about them. Maybe people were a little too quick to dismiss the season they had last year and to think that they're going to bounce back. And who knows? The Red Sox could win 10 of their next 11 and someone's listening to this and they laugh at the fact that we're talking about that after a three-game sweep. But mostly looking at this, and I think this was most people's expectations, these are the bottom two teams in the AL East. I mean, everyone thinks the Yankees are going to win, understandably so. I think if Toronto can get healthy, you know, with some of the guys that they're dealing with being out right now, I think everyone loves the mix of new guys they brought in with the young talent that was already there and ascending. And the Rays, even though, you know, Blake Snell's not there anymore, and you know they have their kind of usual attrition that they have to some degree every year, everyone expects the Rays to figure it out because, well, that's what they've done for over a decade now. So you have those three, and then everyone was, you know, most people were not high on the Red Sox, but not particularly low on them either. You know, I saw a lot of 500 type predictions for them and the Orioles being at the bottom. Did we learn anything about that? Maybe the Orioles are closer to the Red Sox and that says more about the Red Sox than it does the Orioles. Maybe, but after three games, who knows? I just think, for the Orioles' sake, it was good to see them pitch the way they did. And keep in mind, colder conditions at Fenway Park. You know, I think certainly the Orioles hit a few balls over the course of the series where you'd say, that might have gotten out come May, come June at Fenway.
Well, it took us 15 minutes to get to that, but the first word I wrote down when I talked about the weekend was cold.
Yeah.
Why they made Jim Palmer sit out in the cold and shiver, the hell are they doing?
What, at Camden Yard? I mean, it's such a strange time, and so many teams are doing this, by the way. We saw this last year.
It's fine. Turn the heater on and let a 70-year-old man be warm. Yeah. I mean, what's wrong with you people? What the hell is wrong with you people?
I mean, they don't.
Jim Palmer don't even like me, but I love him enough to not sit him out in the cold. Jim, I wouldn't make you sit in the cold if you do my show.
I don't know. But I've never sat up in the upper press box, sat in one of the broadcast booths where they're calling the game from. I don't know if they have heat there. In the lower press box, it's open air. So even if you have heaters you turn on, it's not going to do anything. I did find it interesting, though, when they'd show them broadcasting from Camden Yards and you see them, they're bundled up. But I mean, it's early April. short of playing in down in the South or Southern California, you're going to have some cold environments. I mean, I thought for me, the highlight of opening weekend for baseball was seeing Miguel Cabrera hit the home run in Detroit in the snow, hits it out to right field, and he totally lost track of the ball, and he slides at the second base thinking it was a double. It reminded me of Jay Gibbons.
Somewhere Jay Gibbons is in flip-flops exactly. counting his money in Florida right now. Like
exactly. I mean, that was, you know, that was great to see. So, but you see some of that early in the season. And, you know, a lot of people are going to kind of wonder, you know, so much talk about the ball and what impact it's going to have as far as how it carries and home runs. You know, I saw some early statistics from the first weekend. Home runs down, but ever so slightly that – I don't think it's much to make of it other than statistical noise at this point, but it's so interesting to see. And I mentioned this, but who would have thought the Orioles, if they sweep at Fenway Park, no home runs and you give up 5 runs over 3 games. I mean, that's not the formula you're expecting. If you hear the Orioles are going to sweep at Fenway Park, you're thinking, wow, they must've hit 11 home runs and maybe they pitched okay, but you're expecting the Red Sox to score a bunch of runs and you're expecting 10-9 games. And it wasn't that way other than, you know, on Sunday, of course, the Orioles bats break out. But
well, of course, the 4-hour games every day made it feel like they were all 11. And dude. I mean, we got to talk about that, right? Like for someone that hasn't sat through spring training and watched baseball and was watching basketball games at a pretty good clip the last couple of weeks, right? Like watched a lot of basketball, even the overtime game Saturday night. I fell asleep. I woke up. It was late, you know, for me anyway. And it's glacial, man. I mean, it's unbelievable. Dude was throwing a one hitter and the game was 3.5 hours long. It was unbelievable.
What I mean, it's 310 and 251 the first two games. No, I mean, you know, on Sunday I expect the game to be a little bit longer when a team scores that many runs. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I hear you. I didn't find Friday and Saturday to feel that way. I mean, 251 and 310. I hear you. I don't know what you want me to say though. I mean it's something that we've talked about a good bit. My issue with baseball hasn't been the length of the game nearly as much as
what's happening in the game.
Not enough balls being put in play.
Yeah. It's longer and more boring. Like if the NFL said, we're going to give you another hour of football, we'd say, well, the collisions and the trauma and the whatever. But we'd say, yeah, bring on a fifth quarter of football. Why wouldn't we play 50? We're having a good time here. It's fun. I don't.
A lot of people have complained about college football, though, in that way. College football games lasting 3.5 hours. So,
I mean, I went to Kabuki over in Japan at last days. I mean, same thing with cricket. You know what I mean? The season lasts forever with baseball, but I could stay all night if it was UCLA and Gonzaga. Nobody complained about the length of that game, right? So there really is a point.
That's a Final Four game compared to an April baseball game. I mean, those aren't even
my
remotely
point. Is you
comparable.
Wait 6 months for baseball to begin? You know the team's going to be bad. You put it on the kid's pitching a one hitter. I mean,
were you really that bored on opening day?
Listen to me. On Sunday,
I mean, I don't know what to say. If you're bored on opening day, I don't know what to say to you. I mean, I don't know, man.
I also want to say
I'll hear
this
complaint in June when they're 20 under 500, but
you're going to opening day Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about opening day is it has a whole like meaning, right? Like in the bathroom in WNST, we used to have that picture taken from this top of Memorial Stadium down. It was on opening day. You could tell by how crowded it was and by the way people were dressed, right? Opening day has cold beer, crowd downtown, people,
drunk guys,
hope. Like it has all of that, right? Mm-hmm. This Thursday, like when I saw Fenway Park, it was a little jarring from a pandemic standpoint to me, to the fact that there were some people there, but nobody there. It sort of looked like the 1 a.m. after 3 rain delays back in 1979. I mean, I attended a couple of those
right.
games, but I was at a game. By the way, I want to plug this. Dave Parker is coming on next week.
Nice.
That Dave Parker.
Very cool.
And
very
I
cool.
want to talk to Dave Parker about the time I talked to him on the on-deck circle at Cleveland Stadium at 2 o'clock in the morning. I think he was playing for the Brewers. It was at the very – no, he's playing for the Angels. It was the very end of, you know, like the end of the stadium. It was like 90. I was there for a Smithereens concert, so I can get the exact date because I'm going to pull the box score up. And there were literally 400 people in Cleveland Municipal Stadium. Now, the Browns are still there. The Ravens aren't here. We had the CFL Stallions or whatever. And I remember being at a Major League Baseball game thinking how weird that was because the concert was over at 11:30. We got in the car. It rained outside. The game was still in the fifth inning. And, you know, the broadcast, come on down. Or Feller, I guess, doing the game? Come on down to the ballpark. It was 11:30. We're like, all right. We went down to the ballpark. We pulled up. We walked in. There's no ticket takers. There's a couple strippers walking around, hecklers. There's no beer for sale. And there's Dave Parker on the on-deck circle taking it all in with 450 people. And, I mean, watching games where there's, like, now a handful of people, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm not going to get a ticket for opening day, right? They're not. Greg Bader's not going to let me in. Have a good time. Get a hot dog for me. Get ketchup, relish, some hot chocolate if the weather's not good. I haven't checked the weather. But I'm going to walk around the city to see who's down. But I don't know that 50,000 people are coming downtown or social distancing or the city or I'm interested to see what it's going to look and feel like a little bit because I think the feeling of it a little bit on Friday. Look, you like baseball more than I do at this point. They treat you better than they've treated me. So there's that. And I'm getting older and it's not very good. And they're not very good. And I put it on and they're not trying very hard. And I put it on Friday and I kind of felt sorry for all of it to the point where like I wanted to help it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be like, all right, Bob Ryan and Dan effing Shaughnessy have told me the Red Sox are number three headed to number four. I'm watching this funereal, pathetic team, no one in the stands at Fenway Park, zero energy. There were some great hecklers from the Orioles on Sunday. I want to shout out to the loyal hecklers. And I'm there watching this shell of a franchise that Bob Ryan and Dan Shaughnessy have told me about. My boy Charlie Steinberg's counting his rings, his Red Sox rings, building the Paw Sox up in the Woo Sox in Worcester, where they built a new stadium there, and they took the team out of Pawtucket, and it's an ish storm up there. And then, you know, then I see the Orioles beating them, and we feel good. I mean, I'm tweeting, you're tweeting, we're breaking brooms out, and, you know, I have no love for the Red Sox and watching them get their feelings hurt, but I'm sort of watching baseball sort of disintegrate a little bit. And I'm looking forward to like, oh, we're going to go beat the Yankees. We'll be 6-0. We'll come home opening day and Luke will be at the ballpark. And there'll be nobody at the ballpark. I mean, how many people are they letting in? What can we expect this weekend? What are you expecting from a physical standpoint when you get to the ballpark this week? Because there are going to be people there, but not a lot of them. And that's not unusual, right? I mean, there's my cheap shot at the Orioles, but what on opening day, it is unusual. And it felt really weird to me on Friday. And it made me a little sad for all of it. It made the pandemic come back in a sort of a visual way for me. And then the game time, and then that nothing was happening. You know, yeah, so there. There was a whole weekend of that. But they won a lot, so I feel good about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that's really how you choose to look at it. I mean, can you look at it from a standpoint of compared to normal? Is it depressing? Yeah. From a standpoint of compared to last year where there was no one in the ballpark, it's progress in that way. The Orioles are going to have 25,000 or 25% capacity, which will equate to up to roughly 11,000. You know, I mean, Camden Yards, the max capacity at this point after they made a few minor changes over the last decade, you know, they can hold about 45,000, 46, whatever it is. So, you know, they'll be upwards around 11, you know, when you count stadium workers and other people who are at the ballpark and they count towards the total capacity. The Red Sox had about 4,000. You know, that Boston and Massachusetts has a lower capacity right now.
Yeah, it felt really lonely. It did, right? I mean, from that standpoint, there were people, but not enough to make it feel like you wanted to be there. Luke, I took a picture at the the UCLA.
Part of that
game
was the Red Sox scored five runs all weekend, and you know they lost three games.
But the
so
UCLA
that was part
game
of it
on Saturday, to mix a little basketball into this, because we might not talk as much about it. There was a scene where they had all the cutouts, and there were like two cute girls in the UCLA section with pom poms around a bunch of cutouts. There was a dude in red with a hat, an older white guy sitting with no one but cutouts all around him. They're on the roof of a football stadium playing basketball. And I'm, and you and I have been there. You a million times. You've been to Indianapolis. You've been to the stadium. We've been. I just thought to myself, my God, this is better in my living room with my cat, you know, with some Rofo chicken. You know, I make some state. I had some State Fair Brussels sprouts, too. They were delicious. But there is a point in all of this when you come back to sports to some degree, and it's not the Super Bowl, and it's not a playoff game. And I've been absentee, dude. A lot of people have been absentee. A lot of people mm-hmm. haven't watched sports in months that are coming back to baseball on Thursday because it's opening day. And it ain't going to look like opening day on television. It ain't going to feel like opening day if you're there. But if we're 6-0 and you love baseball, and I love baseball, and I'm trying to get into the swing of things and learn who Ryan Mountcastle is, and this kid Zimmerman. See, I mean, everybody I know knows the kid. Damie Hahn mm-hmm. over at Fadley said the kid grew up in my basement. Everybody knows the kid, and he pitched well. And it's God. I mean, it's as good a story. I mean, forget everything we've said. This kid in Sunday is as good a story as Traber, Bill Ripken. I mean, Cal Ripken's its own legend. Sure. Right, its own Paul Bunyan, but pretty good story. Stevie Johnson. I mean, I go through all of these kids. I had Nagel on last week. I mean, Bilecki tried to make it at the end just to be an Oriole. There's something about being an Oriole when you grew up that you and I would have loved a day like Sunday.
No question. And I mean, with Bruce Zimmerman, to bring it back towards the baseball side of it, of course, Ellicott City native, went to Loyola Blakefield, so the local flavor is obvious, and that's exciting, and that's always fun. And it's funny, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but there haven't been that many Maryland natives / Baltimore natives to play for the Orioles. It's still a fairly exclusive.
They didn't let Ron Swoboda in.
You know, how do you ever let Al Kaline get away? But
the sheriff, but, man.
Right. Oh, yeah. Shit. You know, he was too busy rooting for Don Mattingly, right?
Dude, but, I covered all of that.
I know. It's hard to believe it was so long ago at this point. 12 years ago.
We talk about the malfeasance and the incompetence and sure. You know, all that seeded all of this. Yes.
Sure. But with Zimmerman, I think what's exciting, I mean, he pitched well on Sunday, and Brandon Hyde kind of talked about this a little bit, that especially for a young pitcher, you get staked to a big lead. Everyone just assumes, oh, this is easy. You just cruise. Well, when you're sitting in the dugout for some of these long half innings and you come out there and you get a big lead, it's really easy for a young guy to get complacent and to kind of get in that mode where, hey, I only need to get through five to get my first major league win. And
dude, he can hear his family heckling. I mean, literally. Yeah. But I can hear it on the broadcast.
But he went out there and he threw strikes and he got through six innings. And it wasn't the best start ever, but it was a good competitive start. And I think one thing that's encouraging about Bruce Zimmerman that you look, on the heels of what John Means did on Friday, which, I mean, he was fantastic, Wheeler had a great start for Philadelphia over the weekend. And, you know, there are a couple other great outings around baseball, but John Means pitched as well as anyone in baseball on Friday, you know, as far as the first series of the weekend. But there are some people within the organization that see some similarities with where Bruce Zimmerman is compared to where John Means was 2 years ago. You know, I mean, John Means, he was an organizational pitcher for the Orioles, you know, at the end of the Duquette-Showalter era. He wasn't even a prospect. He was called up. He was called off his couch to come to Fenway Park at the end of 2018 because the Orioles were out of pitching. I mean, keep in mind, this was their historically terrible season and everything was about to get blown up organizationally. But he was called off his couch because they needed an arm. And he went to Fenway Park and he got knocked
all
around
I see
a little
is
bit.
Charlie Sheen answering the phone in the prison in the California.
That's kind of what it was. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to be disrespectful to John Means, but he's flat out admitted that year before his All-Star season, he had created a LinkedIn account. He didn't know if he was going to be in baseball much longer. I mean, that's where he was. So, you know, you talk about some of the ideas that Sig Meidel and Mike Elias have brought in and, you know, Astro Ball and cheating elements aside, the growth mindset and some of those things. John Means did that. He bettered himself. He went to so-called experts in the offseason to work on biomechanics and arm angle and grip and all those different things. And, you know, he developed his changeup with Chris Holt, who's now the Orioles pitching coach, who was someone brought over from Houston when Elias and company came over. But you've seen this progression that John Means has had from being an organizational arm to being an all-star pitcher 2 years ago. And look, is John Means a legitimate number one ace that he would be the number one for a lot of other teams in baseball? No. Do I think he has the potential to be at least a number three starter, like a legit number three major league starter? Yeah. And when you're talking about a team who's young pitching, the DL Halls, the Grayson Rodriguezes, who are still a couple years away, but we could see Mike Bauman. We could see Zach Lowther later on this season. You need a guy to anchor that staff in the way that kind of Chris Tillman did that for the Buck Showalter era, where Chris Tillman, you know, never became an amazing, legit number one starter. But before he hurt the shoulder toward the end there, he gave them, you know, right around 200 innings, two or three different times, you know, give or take 20 innings. So, you know, he was someone that you could pencil in and you felt good about. You could put in pen even and feel good about that for 3-4 years, whatever that run ultimately was. So, you know, John Means is that now, or he's becoming that now, it feels like. And Bruce Zimmerman, some people in the organization feel that, you know, maybe he could be the next John Means, meaning not a great pitcher in the context of the entire league, but a guy that might surprise you and hang around and be in the back end of this rotation. And if they get a couple guys that can do that, it's going to make it a lot easier to try to navigate this 162 game season, because so much of this is going from 60 games last year to 162. It's just more innings to cover. Whether you're a rebuilding team like the Orioles, whether you're the LA Dodgers who are trying to repeat as World Series champions, that is going to be such a challenge for so many teams. So when you get a guy like Bruce Zimmerman or even Harvey on Saturday pitching okay, that you take some encouragement from that, because at some point in time, they're going to be optioning guys and calling guys up and fresh arms and claiming guys off waivers. We know how that works. It's been the way it was that way under Dan Duquette at times. So when you get a start like you got from Bruce Zimmerman, being a local kid, it was a good story on Sunday. And now it's a matter of seeing what he can do to build on that.
He is Baltimore Luke, and Luke at WNST.net. If you want to reach him, you can find me, Nasty, at WNST.net. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and Snapchat and Instagram, all those places, including at Camden Yards on Thursday downtown. I'll be buzzing around if you're downtown for opening day. I'll toss us a note and say hello. Lots of new sponsors and wise conversations ahead. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.